Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And Fred and I were just talking about what a Shendo reliability is going to look like in 2020. And we're full of ideas. But I suppose more importantly, we want to become full of your ideas.
Yeah. And well, I should give the link for the input that we have set up already is at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. Now, have you been watching a lot of TV or something, Chris, with this, the 2020 things that, or, but it is next year, right? It's,
yeah.
Isn't that overused?
It is overused. And, it does have a certain ring to it. I mean, obviously 2020 is a very useful analogy to use when it comes to vision. So, and it does crystallize efforts and aligns people to a big milestone. If for nothing else, 2020 sounds, I don't know, just rolls off the tongue quite nicely. But it does give us these milestones do give us opportunity to say, well, what do we want to do in the future? What do we want to be? How do we harness the ideas that are out there and take them to the next level?
Yeah, and then it's a good question. Ascendo has been at first was just a side project to see if there's interest, and it's grown in getting plenty of comments and feedback and traction and a lot of thanks. You know, thanks for putting out this content. Thanks for making this available. Things like that. So, and I'm sure, Chris, you've run into it at conferences and out, even with clients. It's, oh, yeah, I like that site. I go there all the time, or I find this and this and this useful. And I usually then press back real quick of, well, what else would you look for? What else would be helpful for you? And that's the hard part, is knowing exactly what an audience really, really wants. And part of it has been satisfying because it keeps growing. The traffic and the downloads and the interaction, those things are all continuing to go. But to answer the question where I want it to go is, I think asking the audience here on Speaking of Reliability is a perfect place to gather that information, to figure out where do we want to go with this. One of the starting concepts or ideas for the site was to create a platform that was different than a trade magazine, where you're hit with ads all over the place and banner ads and even articles are sponsored. And I didn't want it to be a professional society where you had to pay to be a member of it, and then you never really knew what value you got, what content you got. You might get a monthly magazine, and you may get invited to a discount for a conference. But I was like, well, what am I paying for that for? You know? Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of, I thought, to have a platform with many voices and with the pointers to many, all of those available resources. And just one example is the calendar page. We look for and list as many different courses, classes, and conferences and seminars, workshops, or meetings that we can find. And we do regular searches, and there's at last count, there were 20 different contributors of adding and updating content on that. And when I first put it out, the first time I put it out, somebody came back to me and says, what are you doing? You're listing your competitors' products and conferences and everything else. Why don't you just do your own? I says, well, one, we don't have a conference, right? And I didn't even have any courses available. We have some articles, right? So I thought, well, in one regard, it's to solve the need of, if I wanted to find out all the different courses that are available for FMEA, I search for FMEA courses and I get 4 million links, mm-hmm. right? I don't have time to sort all this stuff out and what's valid or not valid or updated or available, what's coming up next year. And so when we find stuff like that from a wide range of sources, we list it. And so that if you want to find an FMEA course that's being held in Charleston, South Carolina in the springtime, it might have that.
Yeah.
So we list, we build it on a Google Calendar, so you can click through to the Google face of it, and you can do very complicated searches just on the calendar. So it's pretty clever. But that's just one example of listing stuff like that, that we list university programs, we list books and resources, and I'm drawing a complete blank, blog post articles. The idea is to be a one-stop shop for your professional mm-hmm. development needs, not just what we happen to offer, but in the community in general. And that really is taking shape. That is building steadily. And it's about once or a month or so that I get a request of, hey, we're going to be launching this book. Can you help us get the word out? Or there's a university program that's really, really good now in the reliability space. We should list it on your site. So it's becoming recognized as the place to go to find this stuff, which is very, very satisfying, right? Mm-hmm. But the core premise of that though was to provide a place where people could learn. And learning takes many, many, many different forms. Part of it is listening to the Speaking of Reliability podcast and other podcasts. Some of it is reading the articles. Some of it's attending webinars. There's online courses. There's in-person courses, conferences, and on. So seeing that we need to span that breadth of delivery methods, because each of those fit different needs as a person learns and masters the skills around reliability engineering and related fields. So it's mm-hmm. that goes back to this vision 2020 is, well, do we want to run a conference? or is that make sense? Or I know we're working on building courses and bringing those online. We're listing in live courses and becoming more associated with those, working on books and all kinds of stuff. But that's just a start, I think.
Exactly. And I think the question we need to ask ourselves is, do we want to have some, in terms of the field of reliability engineering, do we just want to continue incremental change year from year, trends slowly emerge and new ideas come to play? Or come 2020, do we want to actually have some sort of revolution about what reliability engineering is? Because from my observation, there appear to be a bunch of different reliability engineering tribes going off in different directions, academia versus very, you know, it's called more practical reliability applications versus more business-centric reliability studies. And I think there's some romance associated with reliability engineering back in the day in the 50s and 60s when it came into play, where there was this genuine era of innovation and new ideas, and people were looking at fault trees that were just coming to fruition, and reliability block diagrams, and realizing how they added value to what people were doing at the time. And I think these days it's just certain tools are assumed to do certain things, and it's almost formulaic. Is there another step? Is there a very first principles approach that we need to reintroduce to say, hey, what tools do we actually need to have going forward? And not only that, is there sometimes too much out there? Is there so many standards on FMEAs and FMEAKers? Does an organization like Ascendo Reliability need to come up with a more contemporary, now speaking FMEA, FMEAKer course that addresses some of the new things that can be done? Because MIL Standard 1629 it's been around for a while. As a rule, you need to continually challenge things.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought of that before, but the late 50s, early 60s, a little into the 70s, there were so many of the tools were invented then. Mm-hmm. Right. SPC goes back into the 20s. FMEA, fault tree, block diagrams, Gantt charts, PERT charts, all of that stuff was in that era. And that's 50, 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of that's happening. So we're due. Now, when you talking about the old school, we have all these cool new toys for censored, right? For physics of failure, modeling and prognostic, I should say not physics failure, prognostic health management and condition monitoring in the asset management world. We have all these great sensors, yet I find it over and over and over again is, what do I do with the data?
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I'll give you a good example, and it's one of the projects I'm currently working on. Look, we talk about HUMs, especially in the military context. Militaries, defense forces want HUMs.
What's HUMs?
And health and usage monitoring systems.
Oh, and sort of like prognostic health management?
Getting there. So the militaries want HUMs. It's just, but it is a... One of the key things about HUMS is it's a diary. It's rearward looking. It says, you know, over the last 10 years, the entire fleet, on average, when the engine RPM was this, the inlet manifold, the oil intakes temperature was this. It's very vehicle telemetry centric. And okay. I think for years, military contractors have really struggled to actually say, this is how it works for you. This is decision actionable information. So one of the things I'm working on right now is to help understand that actually the commanding officer of a unit which has HUMs on his or her vehicles wants to know things like availability going forward, mm-hmm. how much money needs to be spent going forward, what is the optimal maintenance plan using condition-based maintenance going forward. Right. And it's not just... Condition-based maintenance in that context, especially when you're in a very demanding tactical environment, it's not when you hit a threshold, then you replace. It's actually you have to optimize tactical effect, dollars, all that sort of good stuff. Mm-hmm. And many organizations have continually provided what's called vehicle telemetry data to commanding officers and said, why don't you like my product? And the answer is because you're not helping me make decisions. Right. So going back to your point is... We almost do this thing where we collect data because it gives us a good feeling, but we don't work from the user forward. We almost work from the sensor backwards, put sensors in there, and that's good. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just trust me, as opposed to starting at the user and say, well, what decisions are we trying to inform and what are the information requirements and blah, 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 until you work out what sensors you actually need.
Yeah, it's I think part of that, and I'm not trying to offer a defense. Yet I think it comes from that we've rarely had great telemetry. We'd sell a car. We figure mm-hmm. to get between 5,000 and 20,000 miles a year, and it's daily average commute kind of situation. And that's about all we know. And maybe they rotated the tires mm-hmm. or changed a water pump. Now, every time you plug the car in, you can get all kinds of great information about how it's used, how often it's used, how often it turns right, you know, all kinds of telemetry coming off these vehicles. And I think part of that, in some companies, I've seen it where they are very deliberately sorting through that and parsing out, well, which of these things are useful, not mm-hmm. just for collecting weather data about our users, you know, or use condition type data to create a profile for, say, environmental testing, but to help us actually make a better vehicle that better meets those needs. I think there's that use for it. But and then beyond that, it's we see pieces of this, you know, Chris, is the oil light's been there for decades and decades, and it's mm-hmm. It's a sensor. I got some time. I got to go fix that, or my tire pressure gauge. We're seeing pieces of very simple models that say, hey, you got to do this. Part of it is user interface, is what's the driver of the car or the owner of the car conditioned to take care of and deal with. Because if it came up with a F-17 cockpit, telemetry on my condition of all my weaponry and my aircraft and everything else, then I'd be overwhelmed. I'd never drive another day. Mm-hmm. I think there's a bit of market pull, and we're looking for information, but it costs money to gather and do something with it, and we're not finding that sweet spot of, well, what does that person really need, whether it's in our company or the customer, to make better decisions? And that's a good central core concept. That's an area that we don't see others talking about.
No, and for example, my approach, which is you know, one approach, and it seems to be working well, is to start with layers of user requirements. And the user requirements aren't the user coming and say, this is what I want. They're never going to tell you what the decision actionable information needs to be, because that's them designing the solution for you. It's up to us as the engineers to understand what they're trying to do and not just do things that we think are cool. So layer one, list the questions or the decisions that a customer would like to have information to help work through. Mm-hmm. Layer two is the user interface, the dashboards by the commanding officer, the logistics officer, the operations officer. What do these individual dashboards need to look like? And then three is, so once we've done that, how do we need to position the hardware on the systems to be able to communicate, make things happen, so on and so forth. And layer four was the information flow. Layer five was then interaction with existing information systems. Layer six is now the functional architecture. So we actually say what each little bit of software on the platforms need to do to inform all the things we've just worked out the user actually is actually interested in. And yeah. If we keep going through, we'll get through to the sensors, as opposed to put the sensors down first and go, okay, well, not too much data.
Yeah.
We didn't think about analyzing it. We just told it to collect it.
Or what format the stairs. And yeah. Very, very true. Yeah. I've had the occasion a couple of times a client has come to me and said, hey, we've collected all this data for the last 5-10 years. And can you help us tell us if it's going to be useful or not? And so I look at it and, you know, statistician in a candy store kind of thing, full of data. And I built different models but the very first thing would trip them up pretty quick was, well, what do you need to make a decision about?
Exactly.
Right. It is too easy to say, oh, I'm going to collect what I can and then hope it's enough, versus thinking through what you need and some rigor to it, and then design a system to provide it. Still has to be flexible. Still has to be, mm-hmm. you know, all these other things. And sometimes it's just an experiment. Can we use this data? Does it, especially if I'm looking at equipment health, I'm going to track signatures, and do I get enough of a signal to predict in ample time that I need to replace this part? Well, let's try it. Let's run an experiment and see how it works, and under different conditions and different loads and so on. So it's a little back and forth.
You know what you're trying to find in that case? It's a genuine exploratory thing, because you're trying to search for that needle in the haystack, which could be the precursor to failure or whatever it is, but that's mm-hmm. still an informed approach, and you're throwing sensors potentially in a very ill-informed way, but in a very deliberate way. It's those activities or those initiatives where we throw sensors around to make us feel good about something, because condition-based maintenance is the rage, or, you know, sensor placement is the rage.
Right.
And I sense a lot of organizations do that just to feel good about making sure they're doing something in that space without knowing why, and potentially wasting a ton of resources. And 5 years later, there's that sour taste in your mouth. They look back at this sensor placement initiative and say, well, it didn't really do too much for us. And then 10 years later, before they start thinking that it might be worthwhile.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's... bringing it back to our initial discussion around Ascendo and the looking ahead to 2020 and where we want to go with the site and so on, it's questions like that I think, and that's just one track, right? Yet I have found that we do have a nice niche that I don't think anybody else is really paying much attention to, is, well, what do you do with these tools? When do you use this tool, and to what effect? And let's think that through. And the underlying concept is that what we do is help people make better decisions. Not me as Ascendo, but us as reliability professionals. We're really there to influence decisions throughout the product lifecycle and throughout its entire care and feeding in an asset management scenario. So there's a lot of tools. And part of it is, well, what tools do we really need? What frameworks or structures or thought processes should we explore that then can be pointed back to in, say, 20, 30 years going, oh, that's where that started. That came out of the collaboration at Ascendo Reliability to create this new structure, a new framework, or new tool that mm-hmm. becomes an industry standard. That would be a pretty cool long-term goal, I think.
Yeah. So, we've been talking of late, is there scope for us to have an online interactive viable plotting capability, but all you need to do as a user is hit a button and then someone at Ascendo Reliability can actually look at the data you've input and give you a really robust professional analysis of what that data is telling you on that viable plot. There's so many nuances to an ever so slight curve in a line on a Weibull plot, which actually can tell you a lot about the thing you're studying. Is that the actual plotting capability plus the ability to reach back and have someone, no matter where in the world you are, look at your data and either do the analysis for you or say to say what for you or confirm your analysis? Is that something that's appealing to people?
Yeah, and that's just one example. There's plenty of other analysis, especially plots, exactly. You know, any of the data analysis type stuff. Is this a valid comparison? Is there really a difference here? What's this squiggle mean in the SPC? What's going on here? What should I be looking for? Am I gathering the right data? Those kinds of questions and get that mm-hmm. quick feedback from somebody that's done this a bunch of times. Yeah, I would put two buttons on that process though, Chris. One to make a payment and one to, you said, that really does sure. take time and expertise to provide.
Exactly. But the payment, I would argue, if we were able to, this is where we're asking people to reach out to us and say, yeah, this is something that should be worthwhile. There are options for learning how to do Weibull plotting and getting software to do Weibull plotting, and they have their own costs and benefits. Mm-hmm. Is the ability to do, you know, use through a simple web interface, upload your own data, see the plot real time, and then push that button to reach back and have someone give that information next to the button where you pay for a subscription. Mm-hmm. Because that streamlines a lot of processes. You don't need to go out to purchase orders. You don't need to get all those sorts of contractual arrangements in place. But you get really targeted input from a reliability engineering expert that we at Ascendo are comfortable with. And then could be you one day, could be me the next day, Fred. And mm-hmm. then you get that benefit in a very efficient way. And that of itself is something new and revolutionary.
Yeah, no, that would be awesome. Yeah. You know, another part, you and I are going to be heading to a conference. By the time this podcast comes out, we'll be just after RAMS. And so we're heading to Orlando for RAMS as we're recording this. It's coming up. But they're struggling with attendance. And I've seen professional societies that are declining pretty much across the board. I don't know. I think there's a few exceptions, as usual. Mm-hmm. Yet Ascendo, back to how it started, was really this not quite a professional society and not quite a trade magazine, but as a different way to approach a community. And so one of the ideas is to, you know, I say it kind of tongue in cheek, should we hold a conference? Well, I don't know that that's a good business move. In general, I think there's a ton of risk and it might be successful, but I don't see the trend pattering well to that going forward.
No, and I think what I'm hearing is that for conferences moving forward, there is a lack of attendance. It is going down. But I think that the whole concept of writing a paper to solve problems in increasingly unique and sophisticated ways may not be talking to the majority of reliability engineers who perhaps need to focus on implementation of tried and true design for reliability activities, and as opposed to trying to look at increasingly nuanced analysis techniques, mm-hmm, which mm-hmm. is what you have to tend to do to be able to get your paper heard at these conferences. Is there actually a need for us to, let's not call it a conference, let's call it a colloquium or symposium, where we actually not only not focus on those sorts of papers, but we actually say, we are going to talk about how to best do this. Not quite tutorial, but not quite a peer reviewed article as well. Is there a desire for that sort of gathering to happen, and is that seen as more useful?
Well, one of the things that's been mulling around in my mind, and it doesn't need the physical presence. I think physically getting together has advantages. It certainly does. It's much easier to communicate face to face than it is online. Yet I think online there are options to say, all right, here's like the webinar program that we do at Ascendo and many other organizations are doing, is they address a topic and I try to get it to where there's plenty of breaks for questions and prompts and discussions. And when it's working well, the chat window mm-hmm. is just going ballistic. And especially when I have somebody that's basically on my side prompting and answering people in the chat and keeps that discussion going, a multi set of connections to do it. But there's nothing to say that we would say, all right, here's some content. Here's a video, or here's a small training course, or here's some papers all about, say, FMEA and best practice of that, right? And so if you do your homework, and then on Friday afternoon, let's all get together online or in person with Carl facilitating a deeper discussion about best practices. Not a lecture, not a class, but a discussion. Mm-hmm. Whatever that word is.
Colloquium?
yeah, that one.
That's a prerequisite for attending, being able to say colloquium.
Oh, I'm out then. There's a handful of words in this crazy English language we got that I just am not able to pronounce.
Why do you try and us teach you to speak Australian?
Yeah, big time. So the idea, though, is I think that piece that's of, to me anyway, and I hear it from so many other people, a part that's so valuable of the evening meetings in a professional society or of the conference is the hallway conversations. So why mm-hmm. don't we double down and create a form or a structure that is that hallway conversation as much as we possibly can, and use the ability to not, do a multi camera Skype call or Zoom, or there's a bunch of other platforms out there that allow you to put bunches of people into a conference call at once. And then we might get a couple hundred people interested in a topic, but break it out into subrooms or separate events for the time zones or whatever, and facilitate people getting to know each other and sharing of those ideas and concepts and questions and so on. I think we would learn a whole lot from the site about where the needs are, what customer bases are struggling with, what kind of products and services we want to offer, things like that. I think it would genuinely help people immediately to rub shoulders with their peers without having to spend a couple $1,000s to go to a conference.
And while that's a very great point, I'm wondering if people actually say, no, I do want to spend a couple of $1,000s. And when I say I want to spend a couple of $1,000s, I want my company to spend a couple of $1,000s, because unless I go someplace, I'll never get the time off work, or I'll always be hassled, or I just mm-hmm. will not otherwise be allowed to.
Right.
And I'm not challenging anything you're saying. I think there's a huge need for that, but I'm just wondering the extent to which there may be a need for a physical location as well. And I genuinely don't know the answer to it. But I know I can't get work done at home when my children are there, so mm-hmm. I might need to get off site. But
another question, go ahead.
Another question I have for you, Fred, is this is what I get a lot. People say, I see the great value in Formicas, or I see the great value in Holtz, or I see the great value in this particular DFR activity, or I see this great value in trying to understand the cost of failure. And then I think my response has tended to be, well, you've got to argue it like this. You've got to speak in their language. You've got to do these things, which where the managers or the people who can control the purse strings of your organization really tacitly understand in a language they get why you should or shouldn't do something. Mm-hmm. And perhaps there might be a need, Fred, for us to do a few sort of TED Talk videos where people can say, hey, boss, you wondered why Formica was so useful. Well, listen to these guys, and we have this They play a video that we have done with experts we've spoken to in the field or can participate as well, and it may be a fairly well produced very well produced video that really makes the case for why you should or when you should do certain things and what you can expect, and maybe that's something that people might be looking for as well, having us with all we've understood, with all we've learned over the years, try to articulate why it matters to you, the organization, to do these things. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm speculating. I don't know if there's a market for that, but this is where we're opening up for conversation to see what matters and what doesn't matter.
That's a great idea. I'm just thinking of, I've gotten feedback on the NoMTBF site and some of the articles on the Ascendo site being used exactly that way, where people they say, hey, check out this article. This is by folks that know what they're doing, and this helps support that argument. So kicking that up into a well-produced and video, and it might be with different target audiences. You know, this is for the operations manager. This is for the director of engineering. This is for an electrical engineering lead. This, you know, it's because those are all different languages, different motivations, and so on. Yeah, and it doesn't. I've been to those webinars where they say, "Oh, we're going to help you translate what you do to be useful in the language of business," and then it goes, "Well, it depends on what business you're in. You just have to use their language." I'm like, "Well, why? I already knew that. It was in the title. Why didn't you? Well, what words? I don't have an MBA. How do I talk like I have an MBA?" Yeah. Well, I mean, we could go on and on, Chris. I think the most exhilarating part of being involved with Ascendo is the potential, and the people that I talk to that visit the site, that listen to the podcast and so on, that are appreciative of it and provide feedback and questions and comments and spark ideas and so on. And some of the stuff we put up on the site as experiments just haven't gone anywhere. Some things have just taken off and just been really, really popular, and so it's going to continue to evolve. Yet I like your idea, Chris, of let's deliberately spend time over this coming year and run those experiments and run the surveys and run the inputs and gather content as to, well, what would be in the best service of the people that are visiting Ascendo today? How can we help them be successful? Mm-hmm. And if that's our mission, then I think we need to get better at listening and understanding, because up to now it's been, I get a comment and I go create something, or I get an idea and I go write an article. But being a bit more deliberate about it in general, I think is a brilliant idea. So,
yeah. And I think that, I think that the time is right. I see too many tribes going their own directions, and as opposed to back in the day when it was all romantic as reliability can get, where
romanticized is about the best we can hope for.
Yeah,
but we would open up the mill handbooks and start on page one and work our way through it, and that was pretty cool. And yet, I think in the '60s it was a lot of invention and a lot of creation out of needs. Well, the needs have changed, so we need to hear those. We need to see those. We need to help people get good tools together and get a wider spread adoption and improvement on it. I think Ascendo's perfect position to help do all that stuff.
And the good thing about how we worked so far is, as you pointed out earlier, that it's, people question why you put links to competitors and or different conferences, different resources. But that's the idea. If what we do it caters to the need, there's always going to be a market for that. And making sure that we're comfortable doing that while referencing your competitors will make sure that we are always listening, as opposed to trying to sell our particular tool in a vicious way.
Yeah, I've never ever seen any of these other courses or trainings or conferences or books or anything else as competition.
Yeah.
I think that adage of all ships rise with the tide kind of thing, the more options and available ways that we can learn reliability, the better. The best will rise to the top and get the recognition that they deserve. And I think it just is a virtuous cycle all the way around. So the healthiest way for Ascendo to thrive is to have two or three other Ascendo-like sites out there and lots of providers of professional development also being successful. It's not a, if we're successful, it doesn't mean that others lose. I don't think that happens.
So yeah, we'd be very keen for you listeners to tell us what it is you'd like to see from Ascendo. Do things like, for example, university certificates matter in training. Do things like that TED Talk idea matter to you guys? Is there something new that we haven't thought about, which no one's talking about, which regardless of whether you think it's a good idea whether you think it's a mainstream idea or not, let us know, and then we can tell you if it becomes mainstream after we launch our survey. So help us help you.
Yeah, that's the best phrase of it. So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And if I get my act together between now and when this episode gets posted, I'll have a link to our initial survey. And we'll probably, I'm already planning on a number of different surveys through the year. As we learn more, we'll get more refined. But if nothing else, if this sparked one or two ideas for you, please jot it down, make a note of it, tell your phone to remember something for you and send it to us. We really do want to hear from you. So good idea, Chris. I appreciate the prod to say, what are we going to do when we grow up? I think it's a fair question. And yeah, I'll give you some slack on the 2020 thing. All right.
Well, I haven't trademarked it yet.
I don't think you can.
No, that ship has sailed.
That's right. All right. Well, thanks so much, Chris. And we'll talk again soon. And we'll probably talk about this topic on and off throughout the coming year.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.